o'clock on February 11th, 2016. I'm coming to order the Pacific Missouri Natural Resources District Board of Directors meeting. We've already risen for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
A copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Revised State Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414 is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for tonight's meeting, I would like to announce the procedures that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will hear each subcommittee chairperson's report with their proposals and recommendations. The public will then be given the opportunity to address the board chairman. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action. All questions and comments will be addressed to the board chair. We ask that the public not interrupt the director's discussion or action. Thank you very much. With that, agenda item 3, quorum call, please.
Bonnet.
Present.
Fred Conley.
Here.
John Conley.
Here.
Fowler.
Here.
Frost.
Here.
Jeff.
Yes.
Leahy. Caesar.
Here.
Thompson.
Here.
Poodle.
Here.
Chairperson.
Here. Agenda item 4, adoption of the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
All right, motion and second. Roll call on the motion.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Frost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Steven.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Woodle.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Chairperson.
Yes, and let the record show that Director Patrick Leahy has arrived for this evening's meeting.
New watch. whoever I just ran down to, by the way.
We had joked that you'd be saying the Pledge of Allegiance from the parking lot.
I was actually.
Item 5, adoption of the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second.
A motion and second. Roll call on the motion, please.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Aye.
Frost.
Yeah.
Jeff.
No.
Lincoln.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yeah.
Thompson.
Yes.
Woodle.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
And Chairperson.
Yes. I have an affidavit of proof of publication for the meeting notice, so it will become part of the permanent record. With that, moving on to agenda item number 8, agency and association reports and presentations. 8A, Natural Resources Conservation Services Report. Neil Jensen. Good evening, Neil.
Good evening. First thing I want to talk about is the Conservation Stewardship Program. They announced this week a sign-up coming up. $150 million has been set aside for this sign-up. It'll be for people who have existing contracts. They can renew their five-year contract for a new five-year contract. They just have to add new enhancements in order to be able to renew that contract. This is a program that is geared towards operators of the farms and not landowners. And so that's a little different than a lot of the programs that we've had in the past. The deadline is March 31st to submit an application. And so if anybody's interested, this would be how you put on your fertilizer. It could be testing throughout the year to see if maybe you could apply less fertilizer. So it's a pretty good program. Next page, EQIP program. Just kind of want to talk a little bit about that, in that we're starting the process of writing contracts. The Papio NRD, our local allocation is $315,000 for contracts. Keep in mind, too, there's state funding for state priority systems that we also have some applications for, but this $318,000 is strictly for producers within the Papio NRD. This is our terrace systems, pasture, cover crops, high tunnels that we've done in the past. Something that we've kind of put a little more priority this year is on windbreak systems and forest stand improvement. We actually created a separate fund code just for those applications within the NRD. We weren't getting them approved statewide, so we're gonna get some approved this year. The next thing is something I mentioned here a couple of months ago. The CRP program, this is with the Farm Service Agency. It's actually their program, not ours, but they have a deadline here of February 26th, so in a couple of weeks, for their general CRP. It's going to be real competitive because they currently have 23.6 million acres within the CRP program. They cannot exceed 24 million by statute. So, but they've got 1.6 million coming out this year, so they'll be able to re-enroll some of those acres. Our office is really seeing a big increase in applications, even with this is the general program that's February 26th, but we have the continuous, so those are practices that they can sign up for all year. We're close to 50 applications already this year, and we just keep getting them every day. Partially, I think this is due with the rental rates are very high. They try to match what rental rates are for cropland, and with $6-7 corn, there was a lot of $300-400 an acre rental rates. So our CRP has gone up to about $300. Now with $4 corn, that $300 rental rate really looks good. So I think that's why we're getting a lot of these applications right now. So any questions?
I'm George Frost. Where can you get $4 corn? I want to sell.
Yeah, less than $4 corn.
I'm George to Jeff.
Aren't the rental rates varied by from county to county?
It's county by county, and it's also by soil type. So your rental rate is based on your top three soil types of your application, but those also then vary by county, what the rental rates each county committee is set up.
I noticed that Dakota County is really high compared to Sarpy County. Why is their rate so much higher than Sarpy County?
Because that's how FSA set it up. It's their process, their program, but it's based off of rental rates and what they submit to the state.
Hmm. Okay.
Thank you, Neil.
Yep.
All right, moving on to 8B, Nebraska Association of Resource Districts, Director Rich Teaser.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The NERD Legislative Conference was held the 25th and 27th of January in Lincoln. And for those of us attended, we had a very interesting time with the members of the legislature discussing upcoming legislation. I think we'll be getting a report from our lobbyists this evening on what's currently going on. Kind of an uneventful conference, I would say, which is kind of nice. A little bit off the subject, we're 1 week away from Major League Baseball spring training. And why that is important is that if all the rivers in the area are open by spring training, the chances of us flooding are very minimal. And so when things are looking good, because all the rivers are open. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Director Teaser. Moving on to AC, National Association of Conservation Districts, Sydney at the annual meeting. Director Jim Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Reno reminded me of Nebraska. The weather was cold. There was 3 inches of snow, and somebody remarked they'd never seen that much snow in Carson City, so didn't feel like I moved too far. Anyways, big conference. There must have been about 700 people there from across the country in Guam. I sat next to a lady from Guam about what they're doing to conserve things down in that island. Wide range of speakers, congressman from Nevada, Mark Amadai, if I mispronounce that, that's okay. One thing he talked about being in Washington, he said resource use is the most misunderstood thing in Washington, D.C. And the folks that make their living through resources like our folks here and They should make the policy rather than those in Washington, and these couldn't be farther from the truth there. You talked about the need to be against a politicization of the environment, which often happens in Washington, D.C., and that's too bad. We just got a job to do here. And Lee McDaniel, the president of NACD, spoke, talked about absentee owners of farmland, something I really wasn't aware of. I live in Midtown Omaha, but he said 40% of the land is rented, and his caution was that these absentee owners apparently look at dollars more than the outlook for the future. And talked about standards that need to be established, you know, whether you're renting land or own it. Every acre counts. He emphasized that we have the world's best conservation methods, but don't keep it a secret and look at the long-term plan. The message throughout the conference was about long-term. It focused a lot on soil conservation. And with that, a guy named Jim Richardson from the National Geographic photographer presented. He's down in Kansas, and I told Jeannie Drabach from NARD to get him at the Kearney Conference. It would be a wonderful presentation. But he talked about the soil in America, soil in Ethiopia, and the measurement of what topsoil was, what it is, and what they have or don't have to use in those the third world countries. With the realization that by 2050, the question is how we're going to feed 9.6 billion people. Right now we've about 7.1 or 2 billion people, so not too far down the road, we got a problem if we don't take measures to conserve our land and resources. There's some issues on the tribal treaty rights, which is interesting. Some folks in Washington State. And if you haven't followed that issue, I mean, the tribes up in Washington, they're fishing tribes mainly, but their rights to resources are there, but unfortunately resources are disappearing through a wide variety of reasons. And heart goes out to them. I don't know what the solution is to that. There was a very inspirational speaker named Michael Chong, talked about Uber trend, how we get so carried away with the electronics of today and the expanding digital world and so on, we kind of lose sight of some things. The attention span of people decreased from 12 seconds to 8 seconds. So I hope you're paying attention. Talk about gray fields, abandoned indoor shopping malls, crossroads. That's a gray field. I had not heard that term, but technically that's what's happening. And Village Point is not a gray field, but anyways. Jason Weller, Neil's boss, was there. What a wonderful speaker. What an inspiration that he was. Have you heard him speak? Neil, he's hiding in the back. Young guy. And global challenge is what he talked about. And what we do, and I couldn't agree with him more, is deadly serious. And from obviously in Washington, I guess I'm talking to Craig, he's a pretty smart dude, but he's up there in Washington, D.C., as the chief of NRCS, and hopefully doing a good job. Talked about increase in temperature in the world and the water drawdown, and I put a note about Ogallala Aquifer. The drawdown will increase unless we take measures. There are some breakout sessions that weren't, some were good, some were pretty boring. Urban conservation. I feel again that we in Nebraska are pretty well off with our ability to get some money through property taxes. Talked to some conservation person in Nevada, Well, we don't have any money. We depend on the state to appropriate funds for our purpose. So I feel fortunate we have a position in Nebraska. We can do a lot of things with what we have. They talked about demonstration sites, and where is Lori? Is she here? In general, they talk about Green Gardens and wonderful things they do up in Minnesota, for example. And if we don't have a map of where these things are, like a GIS map or something, maybe we should have it for future use, just where all these things are in within our district. The gist of it was, what we do now is not for us. It's for our future. I don't know if I'll be around in 2050 or not. But as things progress with the world's population, as development occurs, what we do here is important. The decisions we make, and we'll be making some on the agenda tonight, are significant. And I've got great pride in our staff. We've got 52 employees who do believe in natural resources. And I'm glad that they do. I'm happy that they do, and that they're doing the job that we have to do here in eastern part of Nebraska. I read a quote that we should make sure everyone in the boat is rowing and not drilling holes in the boat that we once in a while come across. And I'm not going to name names, but when we do our effort, make our decision for the long term, not for the betterment of us as individuals or politicians, but we hope and that everyone is using the same oars and not drilling holes in the bottom of the boat while we're not looking. So that's an important message that as we make our decisions for the future of Nebraska and for the future of what we contribute in our little way for the world, that's great. I'm off my soapbox.
Thank you, Director Thompson. It's far less painful than I thought it would be. All right, moving on to 8D, legislative report. Josh Blackwell.
Thank you, Tim Gay with Hush Blackwell. If the legislative agenda, I don't have a whole lot more to add, but now, but it is a little bit slower in the legislature's short session. But as far as your issues go, it is kind of slower, and I think part of that is because the chairman of the committee. It's his last year. He's leaving. We talked about this before. Several of the committee members on natural resources, which has a huge impact on you, they're new. So I don't think there's as much legislation being created or drafted yet, but give them time. It'll come. So I handed out a copy of the bills that we're following this session. There's a few carryover bills, but if you turn to about page 3, starting about 681, LB 681. That's kind of where they're getting into this year's bills. There's a lot of bills on there. You wonder why would you be following a handgun bill for you? Well, part of that is because it's to carry it into public places like this meeting tonight, things like that. So as you see some of these bills on this, there's quite a few. Ron's very good at following things for us, and that's great. But if you see something, just jot a note next to it, tell John Winkler, and he can get to us, and we'll get back to any one of you on anything there is with more detail. Also, we had John send out this. It's 36 pages. I wasn't going to print it off. You're not going to read it tonight. It takes about 40 minutes to read. But it's very detailed on all these bills that are here. So I just want to go over a few, though. Again, it's a short session, but there are still 445 bills introduced that all have to have a hearing. We're going through that clear through, I think, probably the end of February, maybe into the first week of March. I'd have to look if the judiciary still has some. Then they have resolutions introduced and everything else. So doing that, there's 11 senators, term limited. Again, several of those are key chairman of committees or, a lot of experience gone. I think 17 or... Maybe there's 17 seats that are running now, but of those, 11 senators are leaving. Some of the bills we're watching was LB 754 creates this commission on Military and Veteran Affairs. And what that really is, it's a commission to make sure that all our bases are together. We're watching that for you, and it's kind of important. I don't know if it'll be prioritized or not yet, but Senator Crawford has it in. And what it does, if you're going to spend money on the levy, I mean, you kind of want to know that base is going to be around. So we put it on your list to watch. It's important. There's a lot of people who would be on this commission. They would have resources that could maybe help as well. Down the road, depending on how that all turns out on getting funding and all that. So we're following that. The Water Sustainability Fund, working with Dean Edson a little bit on, there's really no bill on that, but just so you know, in the committee, in the Appropriations Committee, they're talking about how the funds go and how, if it should be capped and how they can use their money. I asked Dean, what bill is it exactly? And he said it's just it's basically conversations going on between Senator Watermeyer, who's a big supporter of the NARD, and Senator Mello, who's been supportive as well. So I assume it would be good, but they're just trying to figure out where the money is going to be and what they could do. And it would allow projects to be extended 1 or 2 years and how many projects could be done in that fund. And just some detail work, but it would be pretty important how that turns out. So Dean's on top of that. We talk to him pretty regularly. The committee priority bills that they'll have will be one, will be probably the scenic Niobrara. It doesn't concern us a whole lot, but that's probably going to be one of them. And it concerns a lot of the members out there. I don't want to get into that. Again, that's one of those bills. If you have questions, we can get you the details, and it'll be in Ron's report, but I don't want to spend time on it here. That will be one. The other one is going to be a renewable energy bill. So there's not a whole lot of water issues going on. There's the governor's – one thing that we are following is the governor's bill on property tax caps. It'd be carryover. It's going to take all the money, basically, the way I understand it. Most people, it takes any money you'd have in reserve, you got to give it back. It would limit ag valuations to 3%. So that's, you know, you can read about that in the paper, too. I'm not going to get into it, but it would put caps on you. I don't know if you've done a budget study of what that would do to you and discussed it. But we are following that. The hearing didn't go well for the governor probably, but who knows? That'll be in the Revenue Committee and be discussed soon. I heard there may be compromises worked out on that. It probably won't look like it did going in. So who knows how that will turn out, but we'll be following that. There's one bill that was introduced that we were following. I think it's dead. LB 693. Would be statute of limitations on tort. So if somebody got hurt or they could sue you in 2-year time period, it's only 1 year now. They would have extended it to 2 years. So if something accident happens, they could come in. Every municipality was in on that and political subdivisions to kind of quell that. So I don't think it's going anywhere. There wasn't a whole lot of support for that, but you are watching it. There's another one caught my eye, LB 711, this noxious weed and riparian vegetation. I know we've followed that before. There's money by Senator Hughes wants to put $2 million back into that and create that task force again. Platte River, Niobrara is where kind of where the money would go. I don't know where it goes. One thing on all these bills, too, just so you know, there's only been about 10, maybe today is a little bit, as of yesterday, there are only about 10 or 12 senator priorities. So you've got, again, in a short session, today's the 25th day, you've got 49 senator priorities, 2 committee priorities, which is 22 committee priorities, 25 speaker priorities. So, you know, we're getting close to 100 again in a short session. All these priorities won't be heard. So we're just kind of watching to see what goes forward. Nothing major that we saw. I know had interest in LB 672. That's the bicycle pedestrian bill. Right now, that's in committee, stuck in committee. I heard today, as in Senator Kulowski's office, just to check how's it going. They're about a vote away from getting it out of the committee, whether they do or not, whether he prioritizes it or not. I don't know. They have until next Thursday. It's Thursday to prioritize bills. So he may take a risk and just prioritize it or may not. The way I understand that bill is pretty much intersections. It really just allows the pedestrian or the bicyclist to have the same access to the right-of-way in a pedestrian crossing, which I thought they had anyway. But anyway, it clarifies that and puts the onus on the driver of the vehicle more so than the bicyclist. But it's an important issue to him, and they're moving forward with that. So that's kind of what we're going on. I want to just scan through here a little bit to see if I forgot anything. That's pretty much. There's one that's kind of important. Did pass. I think you're gonna want to pay attention to this. We'll get you more details. It's the one where, as you do all your roll call votes, you can publicly just put up a board and vote. So you can set up. You don't have to. We thought it was going to be mandatory. Now it's not mandatory. You may put in an electronic voting system. I don't know if you'd want to do all that. But in many cases where they're having these big, big boards, they're going through all these roll call votes, and somebody added up the time it took to do that. It takes quite a bit of time, apparently, to go through everybody. So instead, you could post on wall. I don't know what something like that would cost, but it has to be visibly displayed on the wall. So we'll get you information, and I'm sure Dave will figure out if you want to do that or if you don't. But that's going to pass, and that caught our eye as well. Other than that, that's kind of that's what I've got as far as what we're watching that I thought you might be interested in. But is there anything else that you're interested in that you read about in the paper, caught your eyes?
Director Leahy?
Yeah, am I reading this right? The constitutional amendment take money from the Nebraska Environmental Trust Fund.
Yep.
Away from.
They're opposed to that.
Is that dead? Or what's
no,
the status
on that? We're waiting to see if it's going to get a priority. I doubt it has a whole lot of. I never want to say it because you never know. But I don't know if that will have a whole lot of to get out of committee right now. I've heard it's trouble. The money would be transferred, the way I understand it, into the school funding. So the schools would like it, but it's probably not going to happen. And there again, if somebody has prioritized these, and even then, there's no guarantee it'll pass.
Another one of Pulaski's bills, the NRD general obligation bonding authority for us.
Oh, thanks. We are working on that. Yep.
What's the status of that?
Sarah Klowski has been working, and we're helping him with information, giving him information as needed. He's working on amendments. We're just making sure that anything he does, you'd get some kind of benefit out of it, and it wouldn't be detrimental to you, first of all. But he's working on an amendment. I don't know if it's going to go anywhere. There again, time he's got between now and Thursday, and they're not meeting tomorrow or Monday. So you got basically Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. He has to decide whether he wants to prioritize something like that. Right now, the amendment is floating around, and I'd like to describe it to you. And John, you can take a shot at it too if you want. But right now, the amendment's in a nebulous form of where it's going to end up. Okay, but whether he prioritizes it or not, you'd have the ability to pass a bond if you got if it qualified for the Water Sustainability Fund, and if you were rejected there, you'd get a portion of the bonding authority, like a 60-40. There's a lot of moving parts to it. So if that would you do that, then there'd be a follow up on it on the projects that were done. There would be a kind of you'd have to report. We don't know who you'd report to, what projects were used. And then there'd be a cap of how long you could use it, how long that would be in effect. So it might be through 2025, or it wasn't that far down the road. Maybe it's a 15-year window that you could do this. And really what it was is if there's not enough money in the Water Sustainability Fund for all the projects that are put in there, that people who may have got shut down there could look at bonding. And part of that would be you could bond your portion of it that's out there. It's
also
a little confusing, right. Yeah.
There's a piece to that. If you are approved by the Water Sustainability Fund, you can bond for your 40% match. And the issue there is many districts don't have the tax base to cover that 40% on their own. So a lot of projects that could get funded might not make it because they just don't have the ability to meet that 40%. So it's a little bit of a, you don't get it, you can bond 60%. If you do get it, you can bond 40%. But there's still money you have to come up with if it's from the district's funds or if it's from the environmental trust or a federal match or other state funding. So that makes it.
And part of the discussion is, does that take away the whole idea of the benefits of bonding infrastructure projects, because you still you're paying almost two, you're paying the bond and you're paying the other portion. It, I don't know if you'd get the leverage of bonding that whole idea is for in large mm-hmm. projects, but that's where it's at. So I don't know. We'll know more. We'll know a whole lot more in about, unfortunately, in about a week, but we don't report till next month.
Power districts, all of them have the ability to bond.
Power districts have to, $4 billion in debt right now. But
just another case that, and they're applying for the sustainability money as well, and that's, what about the NRD? So, I mean, that's a, know what I'm talking about.
Well, the power districts bond for their generation and transmission and things like that. They're 25-year bonds, and I think the whole state of Nebraska has $9 billion of public power bonds.
If that gets funded, that's only going to go to the fully over-appropriated, is that right?
That's the repair in.
Yeah.
The way I read it, hold on 1 minute, I'll find it right here. Ron has it in here. It would go to surface water projects and why on that there'd be two NARD directors on there. Fully appropriated and over appropriated, but then it has to be in a Republican River, Republican River and Platte River basin, so that must be where the problem is, right? Platte River was always the problem.
That wouldn't help us.
No, it wouldn't, but it also, they're trying to take $2 million and anytime any money goes to any water project, it's either going to hurt you or help you because it's less money to go somewhere else. So,
thank you.
Any further questions? Thanks, Tim.
All right, thank you.
Moving on to AD, the Lower Platte River Corridor Alliance Report. Megan Sittler.
It says written, but I showed up anyway. good evening. We'll walk through a couple things from my report and then maybe a couple other items that weren't captured necessarily when I wrote this report earlier this month. January, we held our most recent quarterly meeting. It was a pretty snowy day, but Director Teaser and several of your staff members made it out to Wahoo for that. We had our primary presentation was from a graduate student at the University of Nebraska Lincoln, who the Nebraska Army National Guard has, helped fund, do monitoring and research at the newly constructed chute that the Guard did as part of the conservation measures for the Western Sarpy Clear Creek, talking about he's primarily interested on macro invertebrates, fish species, and watching the diversity and the change within those chutes and how they relate back to the river, which the existing chute or the chute that's been there for a while are starting to see very high diversity, so they anticipate that going there. So that's a great asset and a great role of the partnership with the Guard and that project to take that up. So he did a nice job. Then we ended up talking about a number of the ongoing projects or new projects within the alliance efforts or the districts or our partners. Marlon also provided a ICE monitoring update or lack thereof, as Director Teaser noted at the beginning of the meeting. I will draw your attention also to the next quarterly meeting, which is May 3rd at 9 a.m. at Lower Platte South NRD. That is the meeting where I present the overall alliance budget, showing all the partners. So I would, if possible, encourage you to attend. I obviously know that's during the day, so if you want have a conversation about that or have any feedback or ideas or comments ahead of that time, feel free to reach out to me at any point in time. We also, through that meeting and through January and now into the beginning of this month, I had several meetings with the Corps of Engineers, the Omaha District. We are trying to close out properly account for the in-kind for the Lower Platte River and Tributaries Authority, which is the study authority that's the parent of Western Sarpy Clear Creek, Wanahoo, those sorts of things, and essentially just trying to make sure that that is not necessarily that kills that authority, but that it's appropriately accounted, one, just for good record keeping, as the majority of the projects that were initiated under that originally have come to near completion, but also signifies to their headquarters and to others that we would stand ready and able to transition in the watershed restoration program that has been a long time authorized program, and we continue to have a pretty good momentum in moving into that program, which would benefit the districts by allowing study, planning, and construction to exist under a single authority for a variety of environmental restoration, flood risk reduction, related to water quality programs, recreation, what have you. That's, I guess, a nice unintentional segue into the recreation update. Again, the plan that we have completed that was done in partnership with funding from the Corps of Engineers and also Game and Parks Commission. Game and Parks Commission, we are in implementation. Again, that plan was done to basically, we did a public opinion survey. We assessed the recreational resources that were out there, primarily river access, but also trails, other things such as that, and tried to identify where we could expand those resources to increase paddle access primarily, also strongly increase the education opportunity by getting people out on the river, letting them know about the Alliance and the critical resources of the Lower Platte. We are our first, we've had a number of side meetings. We have a small stakeholder advisory group made up of people from the cities and counties, outfitters, airboat association, various folks such as that. We've had a number of those meetings. We will do public meetings. In my report, we are anticipating at the very end of February and into March, we had to do some schedule readjustment with our partners. And so the first one is now scheduled for March 22nd at Ashland. It will be in the evening. And then we will have a second meeting at Fremont on April 5th, and third and final, at least right now, as we anticipate, on April 7th in Columbus. We are finalizing the logistics, the facilities for all of that, and so we will send those out to all of you. Strongly encourage and invite all of you to attend any of those that might be of interest. This is the, every other year, the Alliance, in addition to our regular several events and other public meetings or events that may be needed, we do a Lower Platte River Summit. That will be this year. We're anticipating early November, basically putting a plug out right now that I always ask for a advisory group to help pull that together, either from staff or boards of the districts, as well as other folks outside of the Alliance or our other agency representatives. So if anyone is interested in serving on that or has ideas for speakers or project tours, that sort of thing, please feel free to reach out with me. Or reach out to me. This is also the 20th anniversary of the Alliance, and so I will be working that in within the summit. We are also exploring an opportunity in the summer to pull current directors, past directors, or other members, and other folks. It's kind of another event to talk about where we're at, where we've come from, and issues going forward, and just, I guess, enjoy the accomplishments that everyone has been a part of. So stay tuned on that. Again, the next meeting, the rec meetings, I will get that information out to you as soon as that is finalized. And then, again, just May 3rd is the date for the next Alliance meeting. So, are there any questions?
Thanks, Megan.
Thank you.
Moving on to 8F, Ann Storm Reconstruction Presentation by Amanda Grant.
Good evening.
Good evening, Amanda.
Okay, maybe, Bill, can you load the PowerPoint, please? Thanks. Well, I'm going to give a little background. We started this in 2012. We started this study to recreate a storm event that, you know, through 2008, 10, 11, there was a number of really big flooding events in the Midwest. And so we had the idea to recreate one of those storms in the Omaha metro area and see what that would look like. We talk a lot about the 100-year floodplain here and FEMA maps. And you know, all of that is modeling and calculations. And sometimes it's kind of interesting just to see what a certain rainfall would do. So that's where we started in 2012, and at the time we weren't able to finish this. We weren't able to finish the study. We were missing a piece of modeling that we needed, and those models are really expensive, and it wasn't cost effective for us to recreate that model when we knew the Corps of Engineers was completing it. So we went ahead presenting the results that we had, and so very recently the Corps finished that modeling, so we were able to finish our study on the Ames reconstruction. So I'll point out where we get to some new information, but I know some of you probably haven't seen this from the 2012 presentation. But if you remember, in 2010, Iowa State University was flooded, and I remember the basketball court with 8 feet of water, and it is kind of what I remember from the news back then. But it was a 3-day storm event in 2010 where about nine inches fell, and there was one death. They were without water, and there was about $30 to $40 million worth of damages to Iowa State University. And those were all really preliminary numbers. You know, now I think that probably are some more detailed damages pulled together. But we wanted to recreate that storm. It's very indicative of the type of thunderstorms that we could have in our area. It's only 150 miles away, so we wanted to do that, but do that for the Papio Creek watershed. And so we had to take a look at the unique characteristics of our watershed, which are the shape, the slope, the terrain, the land use, all of those things, take that all into account, and then put that together with the rainfall and see what kind of impact that would have. So the first thing we did was to recreate the rain event. We had meteorologists do this for us. They used data from the National Weather Service radar data. They compared that with observed data, and they came up with a rainfall distribution. And this is the map that shows that distribution. The red is the heavier rain, with the green being the lighter amounts. And this was a 3-day event, so you can see, you know, and this, what you're looking at is, this is the rainfall pattern in Iowa with the Papio Creek watershed spatially located on top of that. So the Ames watershed, they had a large rain, you know, maybe 3 to 4 inches on that first day that fell in about the middle of their watershed. The second day, there was a little reprieve. It was about a half inch to 1 inch of rain fell. And then on the third day, they had another really large rain, about 6 inches over most of the upper part of their watershed and the mid part of their watershed. And we'll see that pattern again. So the first step after, the second step actually, after the rainfall was recreated, the next step is to figure out the hydrology of that event. So we try to take the relationship of that rain and translate it into how much of that becomes runoff. And that's done using a model, in this case, a HEC HMS model. And that's where I was talking about the details of our watershed, the slope, the soil type, the land use, whether it's, you know, farm fields or houses or commercial, all of those things to get taken into account. And then you can determine how much of that rainfall ends up as runoff in your creeks. So this is just, you know, I said we tried to stay away from the 100-year floodplain, but we work with it so much, can't help it, I guess. So I wanted to compare what kind of those volumes of rainfall look like between the Ames storm and the Papio Creek 100-year flood study. And now this is just in one location, and that's at the mouth of the Big Papio and the Missouri River. And so we're showing, you know, there's, you can see the total rainfall and what that translates into runoff. And that's just at one location. It varied throughout, you know, we did look at the 100 years. So throughout the study, some places it appeared to be less than the 100-year floodplain. Some it was higher, mostly higher, I would say. So this is a storm hydrograph, and this is just showing the change in flow over the duration of the storm. So if you remember that rainfall distribution, there was that lesser rain on the second day. So you can see the peak flows came up on day one, kind of went down, and then on day three, flows came up again pretty quickly. So this is where we get to the new stuff. So the rainfall distribution and the hydrology didn't change from the information we had in 2012, but what did change is this section. We were missing about a 20-mile stretch of the Big Papio that had modeling done. And so since that was completed, we were able to incorporate that. So what we're analyzing now is the impact that this rain event would have on 33 miles of the Big Papio, 10 miles of the Little Papio, and 22 miles of the West Papio Creek. After you have those peak flows, that translation of rain to runoff, after you have that number, then you look at the hydraulics, and that's really where you're estimating the depth and the width of the water. And so this is showing, this is used, a HEC-RAS model is what was used in this case, and this is just a modeled cross-section of the area at 84th and Grover, and I just wanted to show you this so you can see. This gives us a better picture of what's going on with the depth. So this is, you know, 10 to 14 foot depths of water at that location, and that's a little easier to see here, obviously, than when you're just looking at a plan view of a flood inundation area. So it just gives you a better idea of the depth of water that you're dealing with. Once we have run all the models, the hydrology, the hydraulics, then we can put together the estimate of inundated areas. And this shows all the inundated areas for the rain event mapped here. And we'll zoom in on a couple of locations, and I'm not going to take hardly any time here because this is 84th and I-80, but we have the next slide, which we'll get you, we have plenty of time to orient ourselves during this. This is an animation of how that flood inundation would look if that storm were to happen here. So this is at the Big Papio Creek at 84th Street and I-80, and we'll have it's labeled pretty well here. Westgate Subdivision, Westridge on this side. And as we zoom in, you'll start to see some familiar Mangelson's, McDonald's, hotel. And we're going to look at the flooding in a couple of stretches through here. Okay, so now we'll zoom in here to 84th Street. All right, so on this side we have day 1 through 3 of this storm. So this is the first day. Remember, they had about 3 to 4 inches. And it would just about overtop the banks, stay within the banks of the Papio. And then you kind of have this reprieve on the second day as things kind of get back into the channel. But remember, they've had a lot of rain, and there's the soil moisture is very high. So the runoff is going to be higher on this next rain event. They had more rain. As you go into the beginning of day 3, you can see, really see the impact of that rainfall. So you've got, I mean, this is the Mangelson's farmhouse. This is that shopping center. This is the Shopco and all of that back there. So a lot of residential. And one thing to keep in mind when we look at this, this area was developed, you know, maybe the 50s, 60s, maybe some in the 70s. So maybe floodplain regulations weren't, we're different then in some cases. So this is a little further up. This is Walgreens, the Hy-Vee sits right here. I spent a lot of time at what used to be that putt-putt, and it's not there anymore. Okay, day 1. And then it's kind of coming back within the creek. And then excuse me, we'll see the bigger peak come through on day 3, early on day 3. You can again see it's getting up into a lot of the residential. And there is a parkland right here. See, this will, I think we'll zoom out here and give you a good view of the extents for this reach. And this is just one reach on the Big Papio that we chose to illustrate. So you can see there's a pretty extensive inundation in that area. Now, this is new. We had looked at that 84th and I-80 in the previous study that we had done, and so we wanted to take a look at the West Papillion Creek. We've talked a lot about 144th and F. We've looked at that area a lot, and so we'll get started on that animation. So this is the West Papio, and the development in this area is going to be different. This would have been done probably in the late 80s or early 90s. So floodplain regulations would have been in place at that time. Obviously, you're going to see some inundation, and I think that there's just a lot of development in that watershed and increased peak flows. So we'll get ourselves oriented here. So Millard Avenue, Hobby Lobby. I go by shopping centers, apparently, because Oakview's over here. So we'll do the same thing, look at a couple of points within this reach. There's L Street. Oh, here's Oakview. Okay, so I think the first place we're going to zoom into is right near Millard Ave. So also some parkland here, which I think, you know, is a good point to keep in mind. You know, a couple of locations, Toll Park, there's the park here with the ball fields. You know, there's some good use of the floodplain and flooded areas that we see. Okay, Hobby Lobby. As a note, we get a lot of oil changes done for the district at that place, right there. Another McDonald's, oddly. So day one, it is, you know, out of the banks, comes back in, and then we have our big peak flow early day three. So you can see it's a pretty big impact. So this is pretty extensive. And then the next place we'll zoom to here is 144th and F, which would be the Altec Business Park. We've looked at that area quite a bit over the years. Charlie's on the Lake, that area. Also, OPPD substation is right across from Altec. Here's Charlie's on the Lake. Okay, so he'll be, the peak flow will come through here shortly. And so then we'll zoom out and get a look of that reach of the West Papio. So yeah, pretty extensive inundation. So the second new piece to this was, if you remember before, we had used HAZIS, which is a FEMA software to estimate damages and impacts. And we used HAZIS again. In this case, there's a new version, HAZIS 3.0, which we were able to use. This we had been gathering numbers from the 2007 census data and 2010 dollars. So this new version of HAZIS uses the 2010 census and 2014 dollars. So we were able to do that. And another benefit of this has a sophomore is that we'll put into a category the areas that are inundated. So we were able to check that. And you can see there's 13,240 acres of inundated land in the area that we studied. If that rainfall event were to happen here, that's what we estimate. And you can see by category what those are. Again, I would say, you know, there's good floodplain management going on. I mean, you have 2,300 some acres that are civic public park land, you know, so that's some good uses. But you have a lot of, obviously going to have a lot of damages as well, which is what we'll see here. So, you know, big numbers, big damages, over 13,000 displaced people, $1.5 billion in building, that's building damage, contents, inventory. And if you remember that cross section we looked at, you know, 10 to 14 feet, and you could see it, and maybe if you get a chance to see this closer on the animation, you can see the depth of water on those buildings. It's pretty deep, so a lot of damage. The one thing HAZIS does not do very well is estimate public infrastructure. So we have, over the past number of years, we have used 1993 data from infrastructure damage and how that compares to building damage. And so we use 40% for public infrastructure damage, which I think is is probably reasonable considering all the number of bridges, roads, utilities that are in the Omaha metro area. This calculates income losses and then agricultural losses, which is something that we hadn't calculated before. And this time we were able to because we had the reach all the way through and we were able to look at some agricultural losses. So $4.2 million, and that's seasonal, but this happened in August. So you'd have to assume in August crops would be in the field and you'd be looking at some pretty high damages for that as well. And so in summary, you know, we've kind of run through how we put this together, the storm reconstruction, but, you know, I think we saw last time huge social impacts, huge economic impacts, and this really even, you know, hit home harder when we had the full reach and were able to update with newer data. $2.1 billion is the total estimated damages that we have today. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Dr. Jeff?
You're just curious. A couple weeks ago, I was out in the Denver area, and we talked about this. Can you tell me how many breaches in the Ames area were in or the water ran around the detention or retention basins?
You know, I don't know in Ames.
The similar model was used out on the flood in Colorado here a few years ago. Can you tell me how many dams were breached in that similar rainfall event?
I don't know if that was similar to this one, actually, but I know that they had some dam breaches in Colorado.
Can you tell me the dams that were built in that would have been Iowa City that were?
No.
Okay, I can help answer that. The University of Iowa, this information was presented at a public hearing in the state legislature. The University of Iowa has contacted us to request the model because they want to do a better job of understanding how their watershed would react to an event that they had or a more intense event. And so they actually will utilize this, and they'll probably be able to answer your question. But unfortunately, we don't have the University of Iowa's information or Denver because obviously they have different soils and they do have a mountain range. And so their storms are a little bit different than either Ames or Omaha, Nebraska. So those are difficult to compare. But University of Iowa will use this, and they can kind of determine what they need to do at Iowa City. They've got some flooding issues there, too, they need to take care of. And they thought this was a very good model to utilize for their city. So we'll let you know when they complete that. We'll share it.
Okay. Thank you. Virgil Leahy.
Are we going to distribute this out to other media outlets or other kinds of forums? And then with the hazard mitigation plan process that's happening now, are we going to share it with our partners and get their input or sort of reiterate? You know, this goes back to when we talked about the hazard mitigation plan. One big proponent of tabletop things. We can say, hey, if this were to happen, then where would we set up the rescue areas or the place that we would do all the sandbagging that would need to happen? Is there a process or what's the staff's thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's interesting and probably, you know, this was done as a, you know, straight reconstruction to see what that would look like. The hazard mitigation plan did also use HAZIS, and they take the 100-year floodplains, and they do very similar exercise to estimate damages and set up, you know, take a look at where locations are. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. You could do that with every storm in the Midwest if you had the time and money to do that to see what, you know, what impact. But I think probably the best planning is to use the 100-year flood event because, you know, that's just my opinion. You know, we have these other extreme events that we can look at, but I think that that's a good planning tool is the 100-year.
One of the things about a flood is you know where the damages are going to occur. It's not like a tornado or a hurricane or anything, an earthquake. You know where the issues are going to be. Now, one thing about this is we've kind of established a model that we can also look at when if we build additional reservoirs, if we do things to the levees, we do different development things. We can come back and compare and say, are we having an impact? Are things getting worse? Are things getting better? At least this gives us a basis point to work from. Now, Ken, you can put other storms in there, but at least this gives us an idea of you know, how's the system reacting? And obviously, it failed here, although there was some good parts. But we've got a lot of other work to do. Now, will that translate into possibly reducing the damages and, you know, bringing the 100-year floodplain back into some of the creeks, which is a possibility? Mm-hmm. So that's something that this at least gives us the opportunity to look at. And it also just, it's an educational tool. Hey, if we get a rain event like this, this is what you can expect to happen. If you're fine with that, okay. If the risk is too high, then I guess we need to do other things. So that at least starts the conversation.
So it is a great educational tool. So that's, I guess, what my first question was, how are we using that tool actively? It goes back to the conversation Tuesday where sometimes some great studies and monitoring is done, but we just sort of put it on a website and hope someone Googles it, you know. So how are we being active rather than passive with this information? Because it is inside a great education tool.
We're presenting it to any civic group that will have us. It will be obviously throughout the World Herald and anybody else will listen. It's obviously been to the legislature and hearings already. So even folks outside of the metro area have said, hey, so they're doing something in Nebraska, let's learn. And so they've made contact. So I'm expecting it to move around other parts of the country too.
Definitely through the media. And then we also sent out a press release on speaker requests and try to get the word out that way. And that was pretty successful 2 years ago when we did this. We took this presentation quite a few places. Yeah.
Any further questions? Thanks, Amanda.
Okay.
All right, moving on to the subcommittee reports. Agenda 9A, Ad Hoc Consultant Selection Subcommittee for Zirinsky Water Basin Number 2 Project Professional Services. Director Rich Teaser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Be it resolved, the minutes of the February 9, 2016 meeting of the Ad Hoc Consultant Committee for Zirinsky Water Quality Basin 2 Project Professional Service are accepted and incorporated into these minutes, and the following recommendations of the subcommittee are hereby adopted and approved. 1, initial screening of proposals for consultant selection interviews. Recommended that the subcommittee request interviews with HDR Engineering and Olson Associates in the order presented on March 3rd, 2016 at 6 o'clock p.m. Also, legal counsel recommends that the board affirmatively waive the requirement found in District Policy 15.2G2 that ad hoc subcommittee review 3 firms and allow the ad hoc subcommittee to proceed with the interviewing of the 2 firms identified above. And I so move.
All right, we have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Frost.
No. No.
Yeah.
No.
Leahy.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Poodle.
Yes.
Thomas.
Yes.
Red Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
And Chairperson.
Yes.
That concludes my report.
Thank you, Director Teaser. Moving on to 9B, Personnel, Legislative, and Public Affairs Subcommittee, Director Fred Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Be it resolved that the minutes of the February 9, 2016 meeting of the Personnel, Legislative, and Public Affairs Subcommittee are accepted and incorporated in these minutes, and the following recommendation of the subcommittee are hereby adopted and approved. 9B1, 2016 Legislative Bills. It is recommended that the Board of Directors of the Papua Missouri River Natural Resources District officially ratifies the 2016 NARD summary of legislative bills and directs the general manager and the government relations consultant to take such appropriate action to support or oppose the positions identified as such through the legislative process.
That's a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Good evening. If you could, for the record, please state your name and address.
Sure. I'm Julie Harris. 6427 North 150th Street, Omaha, Nebraska. I'm the executive director of the Nebraska Bicycling Alliance, and I was not able to be at the subcommittee meeting the other day, but I just wanted to give you a brief update on LB 716. Your lobbyist covered it briefly in his comments, but I think it impacts the NRD more than maybe you realize, and I just wanted to make sure you had the full amount of information for to make a decision on how to move forward with it. I know right now it's standing as a neutral monitoring, But I wanted to make you aware of how it impacts the great work that you do with the trails. And I have an electronic copy of this, but the best I can do right now is this map right here. There are two pieces to LB 716, one of which addresses who has the right-of-way when trails cross streets. And as your lobbyist sort of noted, it is a little bit confusing that he seemed to think that bicyclists and pedestrians already had the right-of-way, but unfortunately under our Nebraska laws, there are a lot of things regarding bicyclists that are very vague and not defined. Right now, if I am on a trail and I cross a street with a green light or a walk signal and I'm doing everything right on my part, if I get hit by a person in a car, I am the person that will receive the citation for failure to yield because it's not really defined clearly under the law. You can see on this map there are about 35 spots in our metro area where trails cross streets with a signal, and that's the very limited part of this legislation in LB 716. It only applies to where trails cross streets with a traffic signal. It does not cover regular intersections or sidewalks or stop signs or anything of that nature. It has to have a signal. So it's a very narrow provision. And we just feel like that bicyclists need to have their rights protected. If they're doing everything right, if they're following the rules of the road, they should have the protection under the law in case they're involved in a crash. The legislation refers to highways, and that has tripped a few people up. So I just need to let you know that highway under Nebraska statute technically covers any road or avenue or street or boulevard. So even though it says the word highway in there, it refers to streets as well. The second piece of the bill that I think is really important for you all to recognize is that it eliminates Nebraska's mandatory side path provision in our law. And this is a sort of obscure thing that's still on the books that says if there is a side path, and side path is not technically defined in our laws again, so it makes it kind of vague, but a side path to most people would refer to a trail or a multi-use path. If there's a side path adjacent to a street or a road, a bicyclist must use the side path. Now, this is something that used to be in the Uniform Vehicle Code nationally, and it's been repealed from there many years ago, and Nebraska is one of only three states that still has this provision on the books. That's a blanket provision. Some other states have a variation of it where it says unless there's a bike lane or so on or so forth. But we have this mandatory blanket provision, you have to be on the side path. Now, if the side path is covered in snow or debris or there's many pedestrians and it doesn't make it safe to ride, a bicyclist needs to have the legal right to be out on the road to get where they need to go. It could be that the side path doesn't take up the bicyclist to their destination. There are many reasons why a bicyclist might need to be on the road instead of the mandatory side path. It also prevents our cities from having the flexibility to plan the facilities we know that will make it safer for all users. So if the city of Omaha, for instance, decides that we need a side path and a bike lane together to make it as safe as it needs to be, then the city should be able to make that determination for themselves and not have to deal with this blanket provision. By supporting this, we are in no way saying that side paths or the trails that you all have built are bad. We're not trying to force bicyclists off of the facilities that you have built by any means. We are 100% supportive of all of the wonderful work you're doing. It's just that we need to make sure that there's flexibility built in, common sense flexibility for the safety of all the users of our facilities. So that's just a very brief overview. This is the Nebraska Bicycling Alliance has only been up and going since 2013 and only with paid staff. I'm the only paid staff person since April. So in the future, we'll have a better system to keep you all apprised of some of this information ahead of the game. But I just felt it was necessary to try to come and make sure that you all understood exactly how all the great work you're doing with your trails is impacted by this bill. I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Thanks, Julie. Director Jeff?
You said it's in statute if you got a parallel bike trail, they must use the bike trail instead of the road.
Mm-hmm.
Can you provide me with that statute or have staff provide me with that statute?
Yeah, it's in Chapter 60, and I can give you the exact number.
All right. I'd appreciate that.
Yeah.
Any further questions? Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Anybody else from the public that wishes to speak to this item? staff or director? Is Director Thompson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's probably going to be more intersections that we're going to have to control through this bill as we continue to build our trails. I would like to amend the motion to change this particular NRD's position on LB 716 from monitor to support for the reasons Julie gave, and that's about it.
Second. All right. We have a motion and a second to amend the resolution. Any discussion on the amendment? Director John Conley.
I have concerns that this unilaterally gives bicyclists the right to go charging through an intersection, and when there's traffic potentially turning, they can overtake a vehicle that's making a turn. Drivers can't necessarily look behind them on their curb lane. I think it is going to lead to accidents if they have no responsibility for looking out for what's going on, and arbitrarily gives them the right of way. A driver can't necessarily know what's going on behind them in the curb lane, and so I'm going to oppose this.
We'll get that, Director Lake, and jump to you, Director Thompson.
Well, I mean, they still have to follow the rules of the road, get the walk signal or bike signal, whatever, and the green light. And, I mean, just because they aren't, their obligation is, I don't want to get ran over. I'm in a bike and that's a car, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think they still have common sense, would say, hey, I need to look both ways before I cross the street. And it's more or less cars, and I can tell you from experience, not just biking but running on certain intersections. Cars are just cruising along, and they just make the right turn without checking for pedestrians. It's not pedestrians not checking for cars. Trust me, every bicyclist and walker or mom with a stroller is checking for a car, because if you get hit with a car,
you lose.
You get hit with a car. Now, mm-hmm. It's about fixing that insult to injury, that after you get hit by a car, then that driver's going to sue you for scratching up their fender or something like that while you're sitting in the hospital paying your bill. So I think this is common sense stuff, and that's why I'm in support of it. Although I think the whole exercise of us going through these bills and giving our thumbs up and thumbs down is a ridiculous exercise, but that's for another time.
Director Thompson.
We have a location. I don't know if it was on Julie's map on Leavenworth and 29th, where you can't go into the bike lane with your vehicle before you turn south to get on 480. And obviously I've learned to look for whoever's coming down that stairwell, that bike lane on the street. And it behooves me as a vehicle driver that, yes, I have to look. It doesn't give me any carte blanche. If the guy's coming down 25 miles an hour on the street, I've got to look for that guy. And what this bill would help do is that if I'm on this bicycle, I hit the car, it's my fault? No, that's not right. You know, bicycling is part of our transportation effort. Look where we were 10 years ago and where we are today, and 10 years from now where we're going to be. And this kind of law, this kind of change to get Nebraska to get on board with it is a plus to get something like this going.
I've
got a question for staff. Correct me for a while. Just real quick, I believe Pat's right on here. This is kind of moot. I thought from subcommittee night that they put out the reason why we're neither for or against right now is because they're working with the language to get it right this time. So whether we go up or down doesn't matter. Am I correct?
Well, I mean, if you support it, we could actually contact the senators on the committee or send a letter saying that, in fact, the PAPIO supports. If it makes a difference, I don't know, but okay. That's up to each individual senator.
All right.
Instead of just not saying anything or just monitoring it. Technically, it may or may not. I don't. Director Teaser.
Well, as I stated, Tuesday night, I have a concern. I'm very pro-bicycle trails, as you know, and we have one in western Douglas County, but the intent on West Maple Road, west of Waterloo, between Waterloo and Valley, was to have two off-road trails, one each side of the Maple Street, and to keep the bicyclists on those trails rather than going down where the gravel trucks were going. And I mean, it's just, you know, a gravel truck and a bicycle, you know, at 55 miles an hour, and tell you what, it just doesn't sound very good. And so I had some real concerns with the senator's proposal, his bill, and I expressed to our general manager Wayne for that during the conference. And realistically, we don't think this bill is going to go anywhere, do we? Or do we know?
Unless it's prioritized, it will not.
Yeah.
Rex Thompson. As we heard tonight, that wouldn't apply. This is where there are traffic signals. So your concern is it's a legitimate concern, but what this law does is, as Julie mentioned, it's only where there's traffic signals.
Okay, now, did I misunderstand that? If you're saying that they can, if there are trails on paralleling the highway, the street, that they can choose between the trail or the street. That's what I understood.
Yeah, that's for that mandatory side path provision.
Well, see, there we are. And see, that's...
Any further comments from George Frost?
Getting to his point with the semis and stuff, if the first semi gets by a biker, there's such a wind draft, and if there's a second semi following them, they're going to get sucked right in underneath the second semi.
Any further comments from directors? Seeing none, roll call on the amendment.
Yeah.
I'm going to abstain.
Leahy.
Yes.
Caesar.
No.
Thompson.
Yes.
Udo.
Abstain.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Sorry.
John Conley.
No.
Fowler.
Yes.
Frost.
No.
Chairperson?
Yes.
And I vote on the amendment.
6A, 3A, 2A.
All right, now any further discussion, Director Japp?
Yes. I notice on Bill 378CA, the right to farm, we're just monitoring it. Why was that? What was the reason we're monitoring this constitutional amendment?
I don't remember the discussion. I think because the Constitution is going to go to the vote of the people, so I don't know if anybody felt real strongly about it either way, so I think they just put monitor on it.
Well, I would amend that we have staff support this, but write a letter in support of this bill. I don't know why we wouldn't want to support ranching and farming in the state of Nebraska being the number one economic driver of the state.
Before I'm going to vote in favor or against, I'd like more details. And we're really lacking here. So.
Point of order. It hasn't been seconded yet.
All right. We have an amendment proposed by Director Japp and seconded by Director Frost. Open up for discussion on the amendment.
Well, I didn't attend. That's why I asked. You apparently you were in attendance. I would have thought, again, agriculture, the number one economic, industry in the state. We're here to protect water for agriculture users. And for some reason, we don't want to have the people in the state of Nebraska to have the right to farm a ranch. And I think that's just contradictive to what this board's for.
I don't think the position to monitor means we don't want people to farm a ranch. That's probably the furthest thing that what the districts do. But I think the basis of the bill was the
price for water, isn't it?
No, it's the pressure that farmers and ranchers, especially livestock producers, that we're getting from groups like PETA and other interests to try to either ban or change livestock farming as we exist. And Megan's shaking her head, and I think that's correct. So I think the NRDs, it's not a matter of water Well, maybe if you're looking at pollutants from that type of things, but it's more of an issue of, for example, the Farm Bureau, the cattlemen's, all of those type of groups. So I think that from the manager's perspective, it was more of, let's just see where this goes. This really isn't our fight. And it's not because we don't support cattle ranchers, we don't support ag. It's just that this is something that you can get in too many fights, and all of a sudden you kind of your support or your opposition gets diluted when you get in too many of these things. So it was best felt that our resources would be better spent in other legislation than getting involved in this, if I remember the correction or the discussion correctly.
Well, the executive committee as well as the legislative committee didn't see any compelling reason to support it or propose it. So, so that's our stand, and as your representative, that's the way I voted.
Any other further comments from Director Sturge Conley?
Yeah, I would hesitate to start just arbitrarily changing things when we don't know what's in these bills. They have studied them at the NARD managers meeting. They studied them at the meeting in Lincoln. And I think we're shooting from the hip when we start changing things that we really don't know what's in the bill. And I just recommend that we not do that.
Any further comments from directors? I'm seeing on a roll call on Director Jaff's amendment.
Leahy.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
No.
Sir, was that a no? Is that a no?
No.
Poodle.
Okay.
Bonnet.
No.
Fred Conley.
No.
John Conley.
No.
Fowler.
Nope.
Ross.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
Chairperson.
No.
Motion as amended.
3 yeas, 7 nays, 1 abstention.
All right. Any further question on the original motion as amended? Seeing none, roll call on the motion as amended.
Caesar.
Yeah.
Thompson.
Yes.
Woodle.
Yeah.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Fred Conley. John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Ross.
Same.
Yeah.
No.
Chairperson.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry, Director Lane.
All abstain. You must have already known that.
And Chairperson. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Eight yay, one nay, and two.
Thank you, Director Conley. Moving on to 9C, Programs, Projects, and Operations Subcommittee, Director John Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Be it resolved that the minutes of the February 9th, 2016 meeting of the Programs, Projects, and Operations Subcommittee are accepted, incorporated in these minutes, and the following recommendations of the subcommittee are hereby adopted and approved. Number one, Fort Calhoun Litigation Settlement Agreement and Water Supply Contract. Subcommittee recommends that the General Manager be authorized to execute the proposed Fort Calhoun Litigation Settlement Agreement and the Water Supply Contract. Such changes deemed necessary by the General Manager and approved as informed by District Legal Counsel, and I so move.
We have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Director Frost.
Somewhere in here I've seen that the line coming in Fort Calhoun, the 6-inch line. And you're going to restrict it down to 200 gallons per minute, which would be down to 2-inch line. What kind of restriction are you going to put on that to restrict it that much?
Well, I think you're referring to what the pressures or the gallons per minute in the agreement, which were designed by our engineer and the city's engineer. So it meets all the requirements that they requested and that the facilities can provide. So it's a very technical calculation, and maybe Zach can get into it, but I just know when they have a professional engineer, we have a professional engineer, they got together and say and indicated this is what the community needs. And so that's why it's in there.
Well, I don't know what you're going to do, but if they hook a 6-inch line onto that, you're going to get more than 200 gallons a minute, I would think.
There's reducer valves. There's various equipment that you can reduce pressures. If it's 12-inch valve, you can reduce a pressure to a home or whatever. It's very common practice in water distribution systems. Mm-hmm. I think MUD probably has millions of them. But.
Yeah, well, not very many.
Yeah, and ultimately what it comes down to, too, is whenever you contractually bind yourself to a gallons per minute, you have to assume what are your normal operating conditions and possible worst-case conditions. In the agreement, it states that's what we're guaranteeing them is a not-to-exceed 200 gallons per minute. It also states that we do have excess capacity, and we're not going to restrict that. So should something happen and they're pulling more water than that, we're not going to go out there and say, hey, stop doing that in an emergency situation.
They get a boom in building right out by there.
Well, if that's the case, if they're getting a boom in building and they require additional gallons per minute, then that's something we would have to renegotiate it. If we were to suddenly say, hey, you can have 1,000 gallons per minute, that would mean we probably couldn't add new customers to the system. That'd simply be bad practice.
Any further questions from Director Jeff?
In the water supply contract, was there a change in the rate schedule?
That they're being charged?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
As it's currently stated, once and if that second connection happens, there's a methodology laid out for calculating their rate. As of right now, between now and whenever that happens, it's still up. It's subject to however the board wants to set that rate.
Any further questions or comments from directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Thompson.
Yes.
Udo.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Brett Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Frost.
Abstain.
Jeff.
Abstain.
Leahy.
No.
Caesar.
Yes.
Chairperson.
Yes.
Moving on now to item two. This is amendment two to the professional services contract with Fire Engineering for the Big Papio Creek Levee Culverts Project. It's recommended the general manager be authorized to execute contract amendment number two to the professional service contract with Fire Engineering, Inc. for the Big Papio Levee Culverts Project in the amount of $39,185, making the maximum not to exceed contract amount $263,053, subject to changes deemed necessary by the general manager and approved as formed by district legal counsel.
We have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Udo.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Ross.
Yeah.
Jeff.
No.
Leahy.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Chairperson.
Yes.
And yay, one nay.
Item three is bids received Pigeon Jones Creek Grade Stabilization Structure PJ-8. Subcommittee recommends that the general manager be authorized to execute a contract with Detlefsen Construction for the construction of Pigeon Jones Creek Grade Control Structure PJ-8 in the bid amount of $137,361.12, subject to changes deemed necessary by the general manager and approved as deformed by district legal counsel, and I so move.
We have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Brett Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Frost.
Yeah.
Jeff.
Yes.
Leahy.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Poodle.
Yes.
Chair.
Yes.
11 yes.
Item four is change order to McArdle Grading Contract for Papio Dam Site 15A. Subcommittee recommends that the general manager be authorized to execute the proposed change order to McArdle Grading for company contract for the Papio Dam Site 15A project in the amount of $1,486,763.92, subject to changes deemed necessary by the general manager and approved as deformed by district legal counsel, and I so move.
We Right, we once again have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Ross.
Dang.
Jeff.
No.
Leahy.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Poodle.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Jefferson.
Yes.
9 yay, 1 nay, 1 abstention.
Item 5, Lower Platte River Corridor Alliance Water Quality Monitoring Network Agreement. Subcommittee recommends that the district continue to partner in the traditional Lower Platte Corridor Alliance Water Quality Monitoring Network at Louisville, Ashland, and Waterloo, and partner in adding nitrate monitoring at the Waterloo Station, and subject to participation by MUD, Lower Platte South NRD, Lower Platte North NRD, partner in adding a new site at LaShera, including nitrate monitoring, and I so move.
We have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public who wishes to speak to this item? Staff, directors, the director, Leahy, and then get you directed.
The proposed amended motion on there, do we have to...
You need to introduce that and then second it.
Okay, well, then I introduce the proposed amended motion. Do I need to read it?
Did you read it for the record, please? Or I will if you don't.
No, that's fine. The district continued to partner in the traditional PRCA Water Quality Monitoring Network at Louisville, Ashland, and Waterloo, partner in adding nitrate monitoring at the Waterloo Station, and partner in adding a new site at LaShera to include nitrate monitoring subject to additional participation by MUD, Lower Platte South NRD, and Lower Platte North NRD, all for a total not to exceed district contribution of $138,000 or $138.26 over fiscal years 2017, 2018, 2019.
Next. All right. Discussion on the amended motion.
Yes. What does that do to the distribution of funds between the NRDs?
I don't think it does. I think it's as presented.
Well, at Monday's Lower Platte North NRD, they only agreed up to that $8,000 some a year, in a few odd cents. Would this change that?
No.
No.
Okay.
This is just for our calculations and our maximum.
All right.
Any further discussion on the amendment?
Got some?
Director Frost.
This isn't trying to get MUD and Lincoln to...
They are both participating.
It's only up a little bit more than $4,000.
That's what they agreed to participate. That's the proposal. And maybe they might do more later. We don't know.
Did Lincoln go in?
Yes,
yes.
Megan, you want to report?
Yes, I was given indication late Tuesday that, I mean, it has to go through their administrative channels, like MUD will have to formally approve it as well. But yes, I was given the indication from Steve Owen, who operates Lincoln Water System, that they would go in at the same level that MUD, at least at this initial effort or initial period. Obviously, we'll continue to have conversations about benefits and what that looks like down the road.
Any further questions on the amended motion?
Just a comment. As I mentioned, what I learned in Reno is what we're doing for future generations. I mean, we're going to monitor nitrate and all that good stuff. And as Director Leahy pointed out Tuesday, then what? So we can't put in a motion. We can't determine who's going to do what when, but certainly for staff, those are going to be around in 2050. keep in mind what Plan B is. So if nitrate levels do exceed monitoring, plan of action, and that'll come maybe to this board if we have jurisdiction. We may not have jurisdiction, but I guess I believe that we should monitor because it's good for the whole, good for the planet.
All right, any further discussion on the amended motion? Seeing none, roll call.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Abstain.
Ross.
No.
Jeff.
Abstain.
Leahy.
Yes.
Caesar.
No.
Thompson.
Yes.
Poodle.
Abstain.
Bonner?
Yes.
Fred Conway?
Aye.
Chairperson?
Yes.
6 yeas, 2 nays, 3 abstentions.
That concludes that report.
No.
On the
man.
Thank you. All right. Mr. Newman, Director Jeff.
I don't know how many more years of monitoring we need to do. Mr. Teaser made a very good comment on Tuesday night. Why don't we spend money on fixing the problem? I mean, we know when there is high water, we need to shut the gates. We at our recreational facilities, if we got high nitrates in the water and they're polluting, why don't we shut the gates? You know, what, even if it's a coli or anything, why don't we keep the people off the water at our facilities? If they want to go around it, that's at their own risk. But the next thing is, I don't know how many more years I need to hear that we got high nitrates or atrazine, and we have no program and plan, and I don't know what program or plan out there that's even going to fix the problem. Other NRDs have been trying to reduce nitrates for years, and they implement, you know, programs that make sense, but we really haven't found a way to reduce it.
Any further comments from directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion as amended.
Fowler?
Yes.
Frost?
No.
Jeff?
No.
Leahy?
Yes.
Caesar?
No.
Thompson?
Yes.
Poodle?
No.
Bonner?
Yes.
Fred Conway?
Yes.
John Conway?
Yes.
Jefferson?
Yes.
7 yeas, 4 nays.
That completes my report now.
Thank you, Director Conley. Now moving on to 9D, Finance Expenditures and Legal Subcommittee, Director Rich Teaser.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Be it resolved, minutes of February 9, 2016 meeting of FEL Subcommittee are hereby accepted and incorporated into the minutes, and the following recommendations of the Subcommittee are hereby adopted and approved. Number 1, right-of-way acquisition for West Papillion Regional Basin. Number 7, recommend that the GM be authorized to execute a purchase agreement for tracts 4 and 5 for $42,000 per acre for an estimated 41 acres of land for the West Papillion Regional Basin 7 project, subject to changes deemed necessary by the GM and approved upon by legal counsel. And I so move.
Thank you, Director Teaser. We have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Director Frost.
I got a problem with this $42,000. You let the land developer dictate what you were going to pay for this. On dam site 15A, I brought up that it was all development potential ground, and someone here said that, well, we're not going to let them dictate what we pay for the ground. Could somebody explain that to me? Why you can let a developer dictate the price and not go with
it. As with all acquisitions, land acquisitions, regardless if it's a party that's had their land in their family for 100 years or a developer that's just purchased it, the district has a very distinct and set process. We get appraisals. We make offers. We negotiate. We bring you the best offer that we have. Now, this is the best offer on this particular parcel as it relates to the appraisal. So there's no special treatment for anybody. Everybody has the same process. So let's clarify that misinformation. There's absolutely, that's why there is a process. It's so no one has an advantage, no one dictates anything. It is a willing seller, a willing buyer, and this is the best proposal that we have to offer. And then I won't go into the details of the appraisal, but I think we all know it's a good deal. So you decide as a board, you want to take advantage of that or not. Because the next time we go back, it's going to be probably radically different if in fact you don't choose not to do it.
Any further?
Mr. Newman?
I would just note that if we're frustrating the other details on
process of the appraisal. That can be offered. However, if we're going to do such a thing, not information available for
Thank you. Any further questions from directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Ross.
No.
Jeff.
No.
Lady.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yeah.
Thompson.
Yes.
Poodle.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Aye.
And Chairperson.
Yes.
Nine yay.
Alrighty, moving on to the item number 10, the Treasurer's Report. Director John Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Treasurer's Report consists of item 10A through 10I inclusive, and I move the approval.
Second. A motion and second on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Yeah.
No.
Lady.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yeah.
Thompson.
Yes.
Poodle.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes. Yes.
Ross.
No.
Chairperson.
Yes.
Nine yay, two nay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Director Conley. Moving on to agenda item 11, legal update. David Duman of Hush Blackwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one update in regards to the garnishment action. The district has with Director Jab. There was an objection filed to attempt to stop that garnishment action. The court overruled that this week, so it will proceed forward, and we'll continue with the process of collecting those funds that were awarded to the district.
Thank you. Moving right along to agenda item number 12, Chairperson's Report. The first item for Agenda 12A is district priorities for its applications for funding from the Water Sustainability Fund, and I'm going to give John Winkler a moment to talk about this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'll try to be brief, although it's a long history and story, but you've probably read things in the paper that the district is being requested to remove an application or one of our applications from the Water Sustainability Fund. And I was reminded the other day by our legal counsel that no good deed goes unpunished. As you know, the situation with the levy issue, specifically off at Air Force Base, has been made very clear, not only by the Pentagon, but by the base and then by the governor's office. Without the levy, if the levy is not funded, there is no runway funding. And if the runway funding is not there, the 55th wing will be relocated. And that's two-thirds of the employment at the base and probably two-thirds of the investment in the community from that particular military installation. If you remember back when this legislation was formed, we worked with Senator Carlson. We worked with the Water Sustainability Task Force in the early stages. And we understood that this was going to be an issue. We understood that flood control, obviously, is a huge issue in our district by just the presentation that Amanda had tonight. So we got that worked into the bill. We got that worked into the language of the law. We worked with Senator Carlson. We worked with Senator Mello, Smith, Crawford, all of the delegation. I'm probably missing folks. But Dean Edson, the NARD, all those folks. We worked together, urban and rural together. There was opposition to that bill, and so we worked through that process with them. The bill passed, signed by the governor. We worked with the Appropriations Committee, got the funding inserted. After the bill was passed, then the Natural Resources Commission, the new Natural Resources Commission, was tasked with writing rules. As part of that rule process, some of the same folks that opposed the bill also wanted to change the rules as originally drafted and as listed in the legislative record. The legislative record is very clear. The legislative record, the first thing in a lawsuit a federal judge or a judge will look at is floor debate to establish legislative record. And if you look at that bill that was debated, the offset levies and flood control were a huge part of that legislative record. So then we had to fight the Rules Committee. And we had to enlist, again, all the senators that helped, all the communities that helped, Omaha, Bellevue, Sarpy County. And we had to get those rules written the way they were intended to be written. And we were successful then. The federal mandate was a huge issue. They wanted to eliminate that totally or change that and dilute that. We said, no, that's not what the legislative intent was. So we got those rules changed. We got the bonus points. Then it comes to the application period. You do not hire this staff to do mediocre jobs. So we've got a mission. We've got projects. We look for funding everywhere. We will apply for whatever we are eligible for by the rules and regulations of that program. If it's federal, state, local, we don't care. We will apply for every dollar we can get. We put in our applications according to all the rules and regulations that were established by the Natural Resources Commission. We met all the goals and objectives of that fund in our applications. Now remember, the levy issue is something that we took responsibility for. We took the bull by the horns. We were asked by the governor to go to Omaha, to go to Bellevue, to go to Sarpy County, and to get that funding lined up. We were asked to apply to the fund for that project. And we, in fact, have spent $3 million of our own money, and we'll have to contribute $4 or $5 million of our own money. That could have gone to other projects. So we have gone above and beyond the call of duty. I talk to two-star generals who call me at night. I talk to the base who calls me, and they read this in the paper, and they do keep track. Now remember, through all of this, only one public official voted no to support the funding for this base. They know that. They read the paper. I got a call Tuesday night from the Pentagon saying, how are things going? Because you know what? We've started the process of getting that runway funded. We started the process of phasing the project in and what we need to do to get it going. Now, they looked at me and said, that is not going to happen. We're going to have egg on our face. You're going to have egg on your face. Your governor is going to have egg on his face and the commission as well. So everyone is very cognizant of what is going on. So to have, now remember, no one has asked the district to withdraw an application. The folks that we're dealing with, they work a little bit like, I would say, guerrilla warfare. They talk in the corners. They never really confront you up front. But so they're the ones that pat you on the back in the rotunda, and then they jab you in the knife with the other hand when you walk by. But you never really know who they are. And so we're dealing with that consistently. And you only hear rumors. You never have anybody pick up the phone and say, you know, we've got a problem with this. We really need to sit down and figure it out. You just hear, no, you need to do this. No, you need to do that. So our position has been up until this point in time, we would do a huge disservice to our constituency if we withdrew any application. Why? Because we have the right to apply like anyone else. There was no rule that said you can only have one application. There was no rule that said you could have 800 applications. So we are just as entitled to make applications as any other entity, and that's what we did. Now it's up to the commission, and Mr. Thompson sits on there, to make those judgments of what projects get funded. In sensitivity to folks and to the commission and to the governor and senators who have called this, you know, you need to do this, we sent a letter to the chairman of the commission, to the head of DNR, to everyone else, saying the levy is our priority project. If in fact those two application score and the reservoir project is higher, we want the levy project because it is entirely the priority of the entire state. So we've made that abundantly clear. So we continue to work through the press in dealing with these folks that we really have an idea who they are, but they really don't step forward. And it, I don't know, it could be the Koreans for all I know because, you know, the base, but so that's who that's the kind of thing we're dealing with here. So it'd really be a disservice to our constituents if we withdrew anything, because we are contributing a huge amount to make sure that that base stays there, and it's for the benefit of not only the metro area but the entire state. And so on top of that, they're asking us, you know, you've paid a lot, you've done a lot, you've spent a lot of political capital, time, and effort. Now we're going to make it hurt a little more.
You might be eligible for that project, and it may score high, but we want you to do our job, and we want you to withdraw that application. And I don't see where that's fair. No one said a certain part had to go to any part of the state. It was never, you know, you got to spend 50% urban, 50% rural. It was never part of that. There's going to be years when we spend everything in that fund on the Republican River or the Platte or wherever, you name it. So until someone, in fact, we even had to reach out with our government relations folks to talk to the people who talk to the paper because they can't pick up the phone and call me. Pentagon can. They get a hold of me like that. The base does. They get a hold of me like that. Hey, what's the issue? What's up? What's going on? Mayor Sanders, Mayor Stothert, the county board chair, they all can find me. And so I don't know who's making this request. I don't know how it ended up like this. We've made our intentions extremely clear. But all I can say is we as a staff work for this district and work for the people of this district. It is not my job or this board's job to make the folks in Western Nebraska happy. And especially since we work together to get this funding in place, we have ample opportunity during that session to put in a bill solely for the patio to get the runway funding, or excuse me, to get the levy funding. And we said no because we thought the sustainability fund was going to be good for the entire state. And so we put our backing and got a lot of the urban senators to secure that fund and make that fund. So these are the type of games we're faced with. And so I thought it appropriate to bring to this board and say, this is the situation. And everyone is watching. And I don't think anyone wants the consequences of that levy not getting done. Because I have been assured it will not be pretty. So there's a resolution here to, in fact, support that position if you so choose. If not, obviously, you're the board. If you want us to withdraw or whatever you want us to do, we'll execute those decisions. But that is where we are today. If anything changes, we have meetings with some folks. We obviously will bring it back in March. But that's the lay of the land right now.
Thank you, John. I could not. I appreciate the comments and could not agree with them more. That being said, be resolved that the board hereby declares that the highest priority application for the financial support from the Water Sustainability Fund is the application for the modifications of the Missouri River Levy Systems R613 and R616, commonly referred to as the Missouri River Levy Project. Be it further resolved that the board hereby directs the general manager not to withdraw any of the district's subcommittee or submitted applications for financial support from the Water Sustainability Fund, and I so move.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second by, I think, Director Teaser got you by a hair there. Any comments from the board? Director Jack.
Our general manager, has there been any written commitment from Pentagon or Offutt or whatever after we spend money to build the levy that 10 years, 20 years, they're going to still be here?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
I can only do what they tell me or repeat what they tell
me. So there is no commitment.
Maybe the governor
may
has something.
They may at 10 years decide.
We're low on the pecking order, but we play an important cog in their whole operation. So we hear from them when we need to.
Any further comments from directors? Director Leahy.
I was hoping that we would split these up. Because I support one piece and maybe not necessarily the other, because the withdrawal of the applications, I mean, what if they just eventually come out of the shadows and they say, this is what we want you to do by having this resolution? Are we sort of tying staff's hands with that? Because then, we have it in a resolution that we say, no, you cannot withdraw. So are we tying the staff's hands with that? That's my concern, because I think John's absolutely right, and you articulated it great. That's not our job. You're doing your job by going out there and receiving the money. But I brought up the point when we had the vote about would this become a problem? No. And it has become a problem because we aren't dealing with the world as it should be. We deal with the world as it is. And the world as it is in this state is it's Western Nebraska versus Omaha. or Lincoln in Omaha. And so, you know, I sort of saw this coming. It's disappointing that it has to be this way because I absolutely agree with you on principle. But this part of the resolution, I mean, are we tying the GM's hands? I believe the first part, that's absolutely a no-brainer on that. And the question I have about the commission, and maybe you know this, or maybe it's Mr. Newman, are these Heineman appointees, these 27, or are they Ricketts appointees? And do they have a term, or can they just be, you're out of here, new one, and how does it work again? I mean, maybe, yeah, Director Thompson knows.
If I may, Mr. Chairman.
Absolutely.
There's, of the 27, 14 are appointed by the governor to four-year terms. Come May, I believe there's 9 of the 14 that are up for reappointment. They have to apply to the current governor, saying, I still want to be on this thing. And in 2 years, there's another 5 or so. I might be incorrect on the number, but the process is in May, their terms expire. Whether Governor Ricketts reappoints them, that's up to them. Okay. The other 13 were duly elected by different water basins. I'd be elected for the Missouri River Water Basin. So mostly those folks are NRD people. So the process of the committee is come May, you'll probably see some new members. It depends on what Governor Ricketts does. I can't guess. I've got more to talk about this, but go ahead.
Well, will the funding decisions happen by May, or what's the timeline?
Okay.
Or the scoring process, et cetera?
Let me get to the second half of this. To answer your question about what they say, you must withdraw this. I've been attending meetings for a year. Marlon, thank you for attending meetings as well, mostly in Mountain Kearney, where we wrote the rules. If someone says, my gosh, you got two highly ranked projects, can you withdraw one? Because, you know, that's not in the rules. It ranked. There's nothing in the rules to say the multiple projects funded for one sponsor can be withdrawn because you're taking the whole load. Okay, to rewrite the rules, it took a year to get improved. It took that process that has to go through, first of all, the Natural Resources Department to make sure they're technically correct. Then they go to the governor's, and I can't remember the name. There's a legal term for the governor to further technically review that against state law. And then the governor has to approve it. Now, will the governor approve saying, allow withdrawal or demand withdrawal of projects? I don't think so. So the rating and ranking, to answer your question even more, is there's been an ad hoc committee assigned, which includes the executive committee of the commission, along with 5 volunteers, total of 10 folks. They will meet in April to go through the projects. Marlon was at the meeting in Lincoln. There's 27 projects that were submitted. We do not know the breakdown of those, how many are under $250,000 and how many are over. But the under $250,000, there's a portion of the Water Sustainability Funds reserved for those projects. Get those little ones done. And the balance of the $29 million that's going to be available will be rated and ranked and then presented to the full commission in June, where we will have a chance to look at it as a full commission and ratify or change or whatever all the projects that have been ranked.
And to answer Director Leahy's question, I believe the position at this time, it not only strengthens my hand in discussions, but it doesn't put the onus on John, you would draw it. It's not my decision. We spent $60,000 to $80,000 on applications. I don't have the authority to do that. So I need to go back to the board. If the decision is not till May or June, if it looks like, in fact, it's so overwhelming that this is something that we have to do, we'll bring it back in March or April to reverse that decision if, in fact, that's what we need to do.
A couple other questions about Director Thompson, about the ranking. If the ranking scores highest, is it just sort of guide then what we decide to fund, or is that if it ranks, it gets funded should the money be there?
Should the money be there, it's the operative word.
So they can't say, oh, this, we had three of the highest ranking ones, but you got all the money, you know, we're going to take it to a vote and take this one and move it ahead of this. If it scores highest, it gets funded should the money be there.
No, the mechanics of that are a little bit unclear. That's why Watermeyer has that bill in the legislature to look at caps, because if ours is 13.5 million?
07.
And we don't need all that money the first year. Well, appropriate so much for 3 years. Okay, those things, hopefully, and I don't have the rules in front of me, but they are online, can address some of that. So at least for the fall next year, when more applications are received, the commission says, well, you know, we've committed so much money for these other projects that were approved. But we still have money. Each year, there's $10 million. $11 million. City of Omaha gets 10% of that right off the top for the sewer. SCSO project. So
there's a little issue of, I know various media outlets have requested a list of the projects that have applied, and the department has refused to provide those, as well as any application.
Another good point or a question that I haven't get to yet is, your vote is going to be made public?
The scoring committee meets in a private session. So those will be scored they'll be scored by that committee and then sent to the full board. But
I was not invited to that meeting, is April April 19th, yeah. I believe.
These transparency bills that they're getting out could have an amendment to include something like that, a little bit of transparency to this process.
I think it's going to be a learning curve with those folks on there. So the meeting in June is 27-28. That'll be a public meeting.
Right. One last comment. I understand people are getting tired of talking about this and just tired from the long neck, but I think this is a very important subject. Some of them are members of other natural resources out from the West. We go out there and we support them time and time and time again on stuff. So I'd be livid if I find out it's those folks who are out there sort of submarining us, as opposed to, some appointees who really don't answer to anyone right now.
Correct, Peter. I think it's fair to say that message is being sent to the western part of the state.
All right, any further discussion on the resolution? Seeing none, roll call.
Lady.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yeah, yes.
Moodle.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Frost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Upstate.
Careful.
Yes.
And yay, one.
Thank you, Gene. Agenda item 12B, NRD's annual Washington, D.C. meeting, March 12th through the 16th. Director Thompson and myself will be attending this year, so look forward to attending that and coming back with all kinds of good information to share. With that concludes the chairperson's report. So item 13, general manager's report, John Winkler.
And you've heard me talk enough, so you've got most of the information in your packet online. One thing I do want to mention is Mark Cleveland, a construction engineer, received the 2016 NRD Outstanding Leadership Award for the state of Nebraska. Mr. Cleveland. Martin has been here for 37 years. Congratulations. And again, everything else is listed. That's my report.
Yeah, I think another congratulation needs to go to the person who got the Toyota Award.
He's ill, so we'll bring it up next.
We congratulate.
That concludes my report.
Thank you, John. Agenda 14, informational items. The next board meeting is on March 10th.
here at the same office. So we'll see all of you then. Hope everybody has a good Valentine's Day and that your significant other treats you well and vice versa. We are adjourned.